listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to see you. Thank you for coming on. So welcome back to another episode of Off the Gas and On the Mic. Here today I have special guest and long-term sponsor, Mr. Jeremy Slade.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, glad to have you. Glad to have you. So you've been in a little bit of everything over the years, and super excited for you to tell your story and talk about kind of the good, the bad, the pretty, and the ugly of what you've done, and hopefully other people will find it as interesting as I have in the past when you've talked about your stories.
Okay, cool. Well, I got into this business 22 years ago, and it goes a little further back than that. I had the reason I got into it is I was my ex-wife's family, one of her family members had a roach problem, and when I was at their house, every time I go to their house, they might see one, it kind of freaked me out. I was not used to being around that, and it bothered me so much. And they were always just spraying these rattle can Bengal spray or something, and it to them that was good enough. And then, but the problem never went away. So I decided to hire a pest control guy for them, you know. And he shows up, and I watch what he did. And at the time, I think I was maybe in the restaurant industry or something, and I wasn't happy in what I was doing. And when he handed me that bill back in like 1999 or 2000, whatever it was. Anyway, he gave me that bill for $100 and for 30 minutes of work. I'm like, man, I'm in the wrong business.
Right.
So, but yeah. Also I kept aggravating him the whole time he was there, asking about what his job's like, you know? And I'm like, man, do you work by yourself all day? You're traveling, constant change of scenery. That's perfect for me, because I can't stand sitting in the same spot all day. I like challenges, and I like the change of scenery. And I'm also, to be quite honest, I've never been really a big team player. I'm more of a loner when it comes to, at work. I mean, I played in a band, and you know, but I never played sports growing up, so I never got that fundamental team thing. You know, where you know working with teams just never was my thing. So it was appealing to me. So that company that he worked for was the biggest one in Mississippi, and I think it still is. But they every time they would hire, this is pre-social media, pre-cell phones. So our cell phones had just really gotten popular. And the way the companies would hire back then is they would run ads in the paper. And so I would always watch. Well, I was always in the hiring section. I always look, because this – like we look at social media now, back then we looked at newspapers, you know, to buy stuff or anything. So I would watch for ads, and that company would run ads in the paper when they were hiring. So every time they did, I would apply for the job. And I'd usually get an interview, and the first couple of times they didn't hire me. The third time I went in there, this regional manager recognized me again, and he's like, you're not gonna quit applying until I hire you, are you? I was like, no, I'm not.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I'm gonna keep calling you and checking up on my application as well. So he's like, I'll just give it a shot. So he hired me. So fast forward a year and a half later, I'm a manager.
Wow.
So, you know, I took to it. I really liked the work. I like what I was doing. It's not like there's anything glamorous about killing bugs. It's just I enjoy being a problem solver, and I enjoy the change of scenery and meeting different people and working by myself. And that's how I've been able to keep this job, whereas I was a job hopper like crazy before this. And so I've worked for three big companies. And then 8 years ago, I decided to stop making other people rich and build my own company.
Do it yourself.
That's right.
How's it been?
It's been a blessing. It's the best thing I could have done career-wise. Every year just keeps getting better. This year, the economy was bad. And then the first time in 22 years that the economy ever affected my income was this year. So the first year that I didn't go down. My company didn't shrink. I just didn't have the growth that I normally would have.
Gotcha.
So it affected my bottom line a little bit, but overall, it's every year it's been growth. You know, I've got employees now, and it's just it's great. I've just been too blessed, man.
Well, let's talk about it. What's the name of your business?
Vortek Pest Control, and it's spelled VORTEK.
Okay. And how can people reach you? Are you on Facebook, or is it a phone call? How can somebody go about getting you to come and spray their house? And what are the services that you offer?
We do commercial and residential pest control, termite control, pretty much every aspect of pest control, except for I do not do I don't spray pre-treats for a slab, pouring new slabs for new construction on homes. I don't do that aspect of it. But every other aspect of it I do for residential and commercial. So my phone number is 601-606-5412. You can reach me at that if you're ever in need of pest control. I cover 11 counties in the southeast of Mississippi. And then I have a website. It's vortechpestcontrol.com. You can also find me on Facebook.
Okay, good deal, good deal. So you said earlier that you're more of a problem solver. You're not really so do you like bugs? Like, growing up, were you fascinated with bugs? Were you somebody that played with bugs? Like as a child, was obviously you saw the job at hand and you were like, that's what I want to do. But way back when, was it something that you were you fascinated with bugs?
The only thing I was not really. There were some bugs I was really fascinated with antlions. You know what that is?
I don't know.
All right, so my grandparents had these porches when I was growing up, and I'd play under the porches. They were, like, waist high, and I'd get under there, and there's little bitty funnel shapes in the sand under the porches.
Right.
And at the bottom of that little funnel is an insect called an antlion. And ants, when they crawl next too close to the edge of this little funnel, they slide down in it to the bottom. And as they're trying to climb out, they rake in sand, and it causes a vibration at the bottom. This little bug that's just resting down there all the time comes up and grabs the ant, pulls it down under the sand, and eats it.
Really?
And I would just sit there and drop carpenter ants into these little funnels and watch these ant lions eat them.
Wow.
So that was my first fascination with bugs. I did that all the time as a kid at my grandparents' house. So I wasn't super fascinated with all insects. I'm so drawn to this job because of the functionality of being able to go to a different person's house 8 or 10 times a day. I leave, they're happy. They're happy to pay me because I did something that solved a problem for them. I like that aspect of it. It's a constant reassurance or constant motivation,
right?
You know, to help and get paid for it. It feels great. And I just love not having a boss over me. Even when I work for other companies, I still like working by myself because the only time I had to deal with the boss is in the afternoons when I get back
right
to the office or whatever.
I got
it. I just never liked having somebody standing over me.
I totally understand. I get that for sure. Well, tell us some of the stories about it. What's been probably your most memorable, call out?
Well, I'll give you a good one. My first day on my own after I finished my training, it was my very first house to spray on my own. I get to this guy's house, and there's a lot of laws we go by. Let me back up a second. There's a lot of laws we go by that you think you know them all when you get started, but there's no way they can tell you all of them. So it's like you can't do this, or you can do this. You can't spray this chemical inside, but you can't spray that one outside. What, you know? So you learn those as you go. So this particular incident, I might not have known what I was doing was right or wrong, but because I hadn't faced with this. But I get to this guy's house, and he says, man, all right, so let me set you up. I go to this house with a screen porch, screen door. Guy comes out with overalls and he's barefooted. And he tells me, I want you to come in my house, and I want you to just spray the roaches that are on the ceiling. They were on the crown molding, going around his kitchen, around his living room. And I said, I don't think it works like that. He goes, look, my chickens eat all the ones that are close to the ground.
Really?
They can't reach these. So I got all my chickens outside. I need you to spray all these roaches up here. And when they fall down, I'm going to sweep up their carcasses so my chickens won't eat bugs with spray on them.
Wow.
So I was naive. I should. Now if somebody asked me to do that, I'm like, no, sir, I'm not doing that. That's not how this works. But
right.
Back then, first day on the job, I said, okay. So I go around and spray on all these roaches. They're falling down like he said. And I said, I don't think this is going to work, sir. I just don't think this is going to be effective. And he was like, oh, they'll eat all the bugs. That's the only roaches I got are the ones by the ceiling. I mean, and
was it a bunch of roaches?
Yeah, like, he had a lot of roaches. There was like hundreds of them, you know.
Okay, okay.
So there's just a rule of thumb, if you have a German roach infestation, which is the worst, they're usually a place you can find them heavily is behind or under refrigerators.
Really?
There's the heat. There's usually food gets dropped between the counter refrigerator, and people don't realize it for months until once a year they roll their refrigerator out and sweep.
Right.
So, and there's also a drip pan underneath that catches condensation.
Right.
So they have everything they need, the heat, the food, the water. So, and they'll venture out from there to move to other parts of the kitchen. So I was taught that in training. So I roll this refrigerator out. I said, let me see if there's some behind your refrigerator, if you don't mind. So I roll it out, and I says, roaches everywhere. You mean spray these? And he's like, no, those are for my chickens. And I was like, I'm sorry, I have a hard time understanding this. I don't really believe you. He opens up his screen door, and he goes, y'all come on in here. Come on in here. And a herd of chickens runs in his house.
Really?
And they just he rolls the refrigerator out even further, and these chickens just go to town eating roaches.
Wow.
And then he takes a broom, and he's like, yo, get on out of here. And he just shoos them out of the house and shuts the door.
Really? Wow.
So, you know, I get back and tell my boss what happened. He was like, oh, no. No, no, you don't ever
don't
do that.
Don't
do that ever again. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of learning curves there. But that's the kind of – that's you don't see that every day. But, man, at least once or twice a year, you see crazy stories like
that. You see
like
some stuff like that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess I've never really thought about it, but I just wouldn't imagine it like that. So along the lines of you talking about those being is it an invasive species? How would you word it? What is probably the worst, like, what do you spray for that is like, oh my goodness, this is a problem when you show up?
Bed bugs.
Bed bugs, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I dread doing a bed bug job. I mean, because as many times as I've done them, I still... They just make you feel like you're itching all day. They're not on you,
right?
But you just feel like they are. It's kind of like you find out your friend had lice as when you're a kid. You know, makes you feel like you're itching. Yeah. You know, so you go treat bed bugs, and you're like paranoid. I don't want to bring any home. So when you get home, you're like checking everything, and you know, I put on coveralls before I go in, and then take the coveralls off outside, put them in a bag, take them to the washing machine to wash them. I mean,
right?
So yeah, so that's a very tedious treatment. I mean, I got to take apart an entire bedroom. I disassemble the beds, pull the mattresses off the beds, take the drawers out of the dressers. I mean,
my goodness.
Yeah, we take the wall covers off the plugs and treat inside of that.
I mean, oh, really?
It's yeah. In depth.
Which I guess you have to. I understand. Yeah. But so, I mean, past the bed bugs, like what's the most common thing that you see at a residential home? Like when you show up, what is something that you're just like, oh, this is – I'm used to seeing this, you know. What's casual?
Ants. Ants. I get a lot of calls for Argentine ants, or a lot of people call them sugar ants. You know?
Right, right.
And I get a lot of calls for those. That's probably the biggest bulk of my calls. I do get a lot of calls for spiders and mice. It's really seasonal. You get a lot of calls for ants and roaches in the spring and the winter time. In the fall, you get a lot of calls for spiders. In the winter, it's mice. So right. It keeps you busy year round.
I got you. So job security all year round.
That's right.
Well, good, yeah. Good. And along the lines of that, what is – so obviously there's a lot of – I don't want to make it sound bad when I say this, but there has to be chemicals made up for these pesticides and stuff like that. What exactly – how many chemicals are in the makeup of just a basic home remedy deal? Like are you a chemist? Do you have to mix things up, or is it just
chemicals? Typically, they come in forms of aerosol where they're pre-mixed, but usually the bulk of our chemicals are a concentrate. It's a thick concentrate. You have to mix it with water.
I got you
to make the larger amount to use, make it usable. So I, as far as what's in them, I can read the label and I can identify a lot of the active ingredients or whatever. But as far as the making of it goes, I just mix water with it.
I got you. I didn't know if you were like. Three gallons of this, four of this, three of that.
Sometimes, you know, like if you're using, if you got a job that requires like a growth regulator, I might have to put, you know, an ounce of this chemical and an ounce of this chemical and a gallon of water, you know, but that's about as complicated as it gets.
Yeah.
Now you might have to do some math if you're trying to figure out, well, I have to spray this chemical at this percentage rate.
Right.
And you got to figure out how many ounces of this versus how many gallons of water would make that percentage. So there's a little math involved.
Gotcha.
You know, but it's not. It's not rocket science.
It's not terrible.
Yeah.
I got you. Well, let's venture away from the bugs and that stuff. Let's talk about, you told us that you were in a band at some point.
Yeah.
What did that look like for you?
Off and on again. I mean, I'm a bass player, and you know, I started playing in high school. My mom bought me my first bass for Christmas when I was 13. And so I was never very really good. I enjoyed doing it anyway. So I'm a self-taught, play by ear, and I've written songs. I've had a song on YouTube. I've had not YouTube. I mean iTunes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wow.
I was in 2000. I had a song that was selling in China. you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
what's the name of it?
It was called Frankenstein. It's not on anymore. When the band broke up, it was an issue with the singer. He and I co-wrote it, and it was some issue with the distribution rights or something. Anyway, it ended up getting pulled off of iTunes.
Wow.
So I still got copies of it, and I let people listen to it, you know. But
I got you.
You know, we recorded several songs, but that was like our big one. You know, it was called Frankenstein, and our name of my band at that time was called Villains of Groove.
Right on.
Yeah.
Where did y'all, what'd that look like as far as traveling? Did y'all do a lot of traveling?
Not a lot. It was more a regional thing. It was mostly Mississippi. We didn't, you know, South Mississippi stuff. And we, you know, Jackson to the coast.
I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
We'd play, you know, if we could get a spot in a festival or we played a lot of bars, you know, we played a mix of cover songs and originals that we wrote.
Okay. Well, then what's your favorite song? What was your favorite song back then? I know it's probably ever changing, but.
Well, it's hard to say back then because I played music for a long time. So you're talking about from high school up to, you know, I quit playing in 2010.
I got you.
So it's hard.
Favorite cover song to play?
Ooh. Man, there's a band called Incubus. Are you familiar with them?
What are they similar to? Like Creed or are they country? No,
rock, but it's very alternative. We played some Sublime. You know, you familiar with Sublime?
I've heard.
You played Santa Ria. That was a crowd favorite.
Okay, right on.
Cage the Elephant. You ever heard of them? Never heard of them either.
That's right. I know music just by, like, if you turned it on, I'd be like, yeah, I've heard that.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I do know.
Yeah, we played a couple of their songs.
So. Right on.
That was I was really a big Chili Pepper fan
when
I was a kid. So that was Flea's one of my big influences as a bass player. So
I got you. I
always had at least one of their songs in every set. So.
Right on. Right on. Well, past that, you also mentioned, was it CSI or FBI? Were you an investigator?
Oh, no.
Or neither of those.
I did a stint as a private investigator.
Okay, private investigator. Yeah, it's crazy where I got that from, huh?
Yeah. I was working for a pest control company, and I had to have surgery on my hand. And the company had a policy of you couldn't come to work with stitches. You had to have a release from the doctor from everything to be able to work. So here I was out of work until my stitches came out. And my wife at the time worked for a law firm, and they needed a subpoena delivered, you know, or a summons. A subpoena. So, and they called. She called me. She said, "The office will pay you $30 if you go drop off, serve the subpoena." So I was like, "Don't y'all have people do that?" She goes, "Well, the private investigator that we usually hire to do this, he's the one we're subpoenaing, so we can't." So I said, "I'll do it," and I went to the guy's office, and he wasn't there. And the office next to him, it was office building where they rented multiple spaces, and the guy. I went and asked the secretary to the law office next door. Hey, the guy's name was Tommy. I said, "I'm looking for Tommy." And she goes, "We ain't seen him in a week. He's not answering his phone or anything." So I wrote his phone number down off the door. And then I knew this guy. He used to be a police officer at the town I grew up in. And when he retired, he started this private investigation firm. And I called somebody that I knew was friends with him. And I said, "Do you know... have you seen Tommy lately?" He said, "Well, he got a divorce and he's living in his apartment in Hattiesburg." And he told me where the apartment building was. And I had no idea what he drove. And I said, "Does he still drive that old pickup?" And he said, "Yeah, he's still in that F-150. I had no idea what he drove. I was just baiting information out of
him. Right, right.
So I go to this apartment complex and I see two F-150s, one at each end. So I went and stood between the first truck and the door it was parked in front of and called the number that was on the door. Didn't hear anything. I went down to the other truck, and I called that number, and I heard a phone ring inside the apartment in front of that truck. Knocked on the door. He came to the door, and I served him a subpoena. He said, "How in the world did you find me?" So I told him, and he's like, "You want to do more of these?" I was like, "Maybe, yeah, sure." He said, "Come see me in my office tomorrow. I'm going to be back in the office tomorrow." So I go back in, and he says, I got a subpoena I've been trying to serve, and I can't. Me or none of my guys can get it served. If you can get it served, I'll give you a job."
Really?
So here's what he didn't know. At the time, I was doing pest control at Camp Shelby, military base in Hattiesburg. So I had the clearance to get in there every day to go do pest control, and of course I was off because I had that surgery on my hand. So, but everybody, a lot of people out there knew me, and I'd go in that place without being questioned. And the subpoena they need to serve was a guy that worked at the base.
Oh, wow.
So I knew right where the building was where the guy worked.
Right.
Went and found him on his lunch break and gave it to him. He thanked me for giving it because I've been waiting for 2 weeks for him to serve me this thing. I've been waiting on this. So it wasn't like I was in trouble or anything for doing
right.
it.
Right.
I come back, and I got him to sign for it, and I came back and I handed the receipt back to the guy, and I said, okay, I want to get paid now. I got it served. He goes, no way you got that served. It's only been 2 hours. He said, I've been trying to serve this for 2 weeks. And he said, I was like, well, I didn't tell him my trick.
Yeah, I was wondering if you told him, or was just like, trick, you know? I'm just good like that.
Yeah, I did. That's what I did. I said, I'm just good like that. And he was just like, oh, okay, I want to give you a job. And I said, well, that's good. I said, I think PI work would be fun. He goes, well, you got to ease you into PI work. He said, I got to start you on this process serving these things. I was like, well, look, when I go back to work, I'll do this on the side, but my other job comes first. So he gave me a bunch of them, and I just had really – I'm going to tell you right now, that's the funnest job I've ever had.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was the funnest job. I love it. It's just – it's inconsistent income. You might make $1,000 one week and nothing the next week.
Right.
And I was a family man. There's no way I could have, you know, took care of my family like that. So – but it was a fun second job.
Right.
And but, yeah, so I delivered subpoenas for a while, and I got them all delivered, and he's just gonna like, he said, okay. I said, I want to be a PI. He goes, I'll pay you $15 an hour. And I said, I got to have 20. So before the conversation was over, he told me to give me $20 an hour. And then I did all kind of stuff. I did insurance, trying to catch insurance fraud some. But what I really specialized in was catching cheaters.
Really?
Yeah.
Like relationship
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah. Like,
okay.
Yeah, people cheating on their spouses. Yeah. That was kind of my forte. And, Tommy passed away a couple years later, and I decided to go into work for myself. So I continued to do that as a second job for a little while. And
okay.
And after I did it for myself, all I did was catch cheaters. I didn't mess with any insurance work or anything. But, yeah, I mean, or sometimes people just try to catch their spouse doing something wrong so they can use it against them in court, and I've seen a lot of that. They weren't just cheating. It was just, you know.
Right.
Like if somebody's has in a custody battle and one of them's an alcoholic, and a recovering alcoholic, and as one in a situation where I had to watch a lady one night. I sat like a stakeout watching her, waiting for her to leave her house. She was trying to – her and her husband were having custody battle over the children, and she was a recovering alcoholic, and she was addicted to Robitussin. And I had to catch her buying alcohol or Robitussin, either one.
Right. Yeah. How did you prove that, like, were you weren't videoing them, like,
oh yes,
oh you were, it was
I would sit in my truck and just follow them. I would just follow people around. Like a lot of times you get as much information you can, like where do they like to hang out, where do they drive. You get as much information you can from the people that's hiring you, and you know, would put pieces of things together. Back in those days, nobody's Facebook was private hardly, and that people didn't
right.
realize it. So you can just go on Facebook and stalk somebody on Facebook and find out, you know, where they hanging out at or who they hang out with or whatever.
Right.
So that's a tool that everybody in that business used was social media because it was new.
Right.
At the
right.
time. And so, yeah, I mean, so this one lady, I filmed her. I followed her from her house to a liquor store, filmed her buying a grocery bag full of liquor. And then I followed her to Walmart and took my cell phone in and filmed her buying Robitussin. And,
wow.
And she had her kids at home. And Monday morning, they had court, and I brought the video to court, and her husband won in custody. That's what I was hired to do, you know.
Right. So, how did you nonchalantly, like, video? Like that's got to be, like, a real – like, it's got to be an adrenaline rush for sure. But, like
– oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, were you, like, hiding behind an aisle just with the phone hanging out the aisle watching
I was standing behind a shirt rack. You know how, like, it was at Walmart. You know how behind the cash registers is all those racks of clothes?
Right.
I'm just thumbing through clothes with one hand and slipping up my hand with the cell phone between okay. shirts and
yeah.
hit it on and zoom in, and you got it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a fun job for sure.
Yeah. Other I mean, there's some scary moments too, but it's, you know, the adrenaline, it was definitely an adrenaline rush sometimes. I've had to hide in the woods in Cambo to film somebody doing something they were supposed to be doing because they were supposed to be hurt, and they were suing their company at workman's comp or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. I'd have to hide in the woods and catch them playing golf or whatever. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what can you tell us? One of the scariest ones.
I'll tell you the scariest one.
Okay.
So this couple, of course, there was another divorce case, and the husband got the house, and the wife had a business where she was an interior designer, and they had built a shop next to the house and had a big piece of land. Well, in a divorce, they split the land. The husband got the house and this half the land. She got the shop, which she used as her business, and the other half the land. So they had an agreement in their divorce that the husband couldn't have any overnight guests or have any guests past 10 o'clock when the kids were there. So she thought he was having a lady over after 10 o'clock, and she wanted to prove it. And she wanted me to hide in her building and videotape out the window somebody just staying there. Just even if it's a minute past 10, I'm good, you know.
Right.
Well, this guy's on his back patio with his girlfriend. Kids are running around playing everywhere, and they all went to bed about 9 o'clock, and it was just him and her on the back patio. And I'm just filming out this little window, this little corner of a window the whole time, just checking in. Every few minutes, I'd turn it on to show what I say what time it is and show that they're still out there. And I'm telling you, at like 9:59, she was rolling out the driveway. He had her out of there. He didn't do anything wrong. So I didn't catch anybody doing anything wrong. But, of course, I still get paid to be there to prove that.
Right.
Well, as soon as it was over with and she was gone, well, I turned off my camera and I sat down and I text. I said, look, it's time to go. You know, she didn't stay, so we don't have anything. You need to come get me. And let me back up. The way I got in there was I got in the back of her Explorer. She backs up like she's loading something into it before dark. I climb out, and then she shuts the back of her door and then leaves. And leaves me in there for hours with some bottles of water to film this. Okay, so
wow.
So that's the only way we can figure out how to do it without me getting caught.
Right, right.
So I don't know if the guy saw the light on my cell phone or what, but I'm like 5 minutes later, I see a flashlight shining in the window.
Oh, no.
This guy is walking around the outside of this shop, and I don't know if he's got a gun or what, but he's right. Shining in all the windows, and he's rattling the doorknob trying to get in, and I got it locked. And I mean, I'm texting, I'm like, y'all get me out of here.
This guy's
going to kill me. You know, I mean, it was scary. I was like, okay, I didn't do any more jobs like that.
Right.
But I mean,
right.
I was shaking. I just knew that dude had a gun or something, you know?
Yeah. How do you explain that? I'm just here recording.
Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, you quit doing that style of work right there. Mm-hmm. And then, at what point, when did you come back to being in the pest control business?
Well, I was still in pest control then. That was a side job. And, you know, my kids were really involved in all kind of extracurricular stuff. And by the way, if you ever become a dad, and this is advice to all dads, if you have, when they call for volunteers for, I don't care if it's Little League or whatever, those nonprofit organizations that have those teams, they don't pay those coaches. So I've always believed in volunteering in that stuff. Yeah. I think every parent, if you can, I realize that some people work offshore, they travel and they can't, whatever, but if you can, volunteer to help. And what I did is I was a Boy Scout leader, I was a softball coach, even though I didn't know I've never played a game of baseball in my life. I was a baseball coach and a softball coach.
You know,
I'm like getting baseball for dummy books, you know, trying to learn how to learn the rules.
What age group?
Oh man, kindergarten up to high school. I mean, my girls were middle school softball players, and my boy played t-ball and baseball, and I was I'm still a 4-H shooting sports coach, even though my kids, I've got four kids and three of them are grown. I still got one at home in high school, but now my son, he's in the Army now. He's married with a kid on the way, but I still keep coaching those kids because there's nobody else to do it.
Right. Right.
I mean, now that my kids are aged out, I would love to just go on and do my hobbies.
Right.
But I'm coaching other people's kids because other parents won't step up to the plate and start coaching. So, and I don't want to let those kids down, so I still do it.
I got you.
So when I got really involved with Boy Scouts and 4-H and different athletics, archery, school archery, this all kind of stuff my kids were involved in, and that consumed all my spare time.
Right.
So, and I'm going to be honest, something like PI work, it was as fun as it was. It's no job for a family man because most of my work was at nights and weekends. I'm sitting out in the parking lots by myself outside of bars waiting for people to come out.
Right,
you
right.
know, and trying to catch somebody walking out with somebody they're not supposed to be with, you know, and that's no way for a family man to live.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And it, I mean, I'm sure to like some small extent it bled into your personal life for sure. It probably made you kind of not necessarily not trust your family as much, but you had to have some sort of like you just your mind stayed working. It was hard to shut it off.
Very much. Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah. Of course, my mind's kind of like that anyway.
Right.
It's hard for me to go to bed at night, you know, because my mind is just racing, thinking about all these different things. So, you know, when you have more of that in your life, that's throwing fuel on a fire. It's even harder to sleep.
Right.
Because you got more things you have to think about, how to problems to resolve or whatever.
Right, right. Well, let's go into the 4A shooting and stuff like that. What talk about some of the competitions and stuff like that. I know that you guys are big time. I don't like gun lovers sounds bad. Like
no, it's okay.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to make it sound like
enthusiast
I'm
is the word.
Gun enthusiast. Let's put it that way.
I'm a collector and I'm a hunter and I like to target shoot as a hobby. And my son got into shooting when he was little. When he was 5 years old, he had a Red Ryder BB gun. And there's a lizard that's it's a Mediterranean gecko. I don't know if you've seen any of those, but after Katrina, they started showing up in Mississippi, a lot of places. They came in on lumber shipments from South America. And there's no natural predators for that lizard here. And they get populated in people's houses really bad, and there's no spray for them. And they're flesh-colored. Have you ever seen one?
I think so,
it's like a flesh-colored lizard.
They're not real big. They're about
four inches long, yeah. So they have suckers on their feet. They'll hang upside down on ceilings on your porch and stuff. So my son, I let him put on a pair of safety glasses, and I'd give him $1 for every one that he shot off the ceiling of the carport or the porch.
Really?
And over the span of a year, he probably killed 50.
It got expensive.
Yeah. So I'm like, and he got really good with that little Red Ryder BB gun. So when I found out about 4A shooting sports, I put him in there, and we bought him a nice pellet rifle. And when he went to his first competition, it was a pellet rifle that looked kind of like an AR-15. And I didn't know that 4H was, they're like, you can't have anything tactical looking here. You can't have,
really?
Yeah, because he said, because we don't want to have a stigma on the sport, because it's already hard enough for us to justify, for us to, you know, let kids shoot guns. There's already a lot of people that are against that.
Right.
So when you start letting them shoot pellet rifles that look like AR-15s, well, it's going to put a bad stigma on it. So they just don't allow any of that. So he had this new awesome pellet rifle that he could not use at this competition.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was real upset. So I said, well, son, your Red Ryder BB gun's in the trunk. You know, and he was so mad that he couldn't use his other one. He always performed really well when he's mad. So he goes and gets his Red Ryder BB gun, and he's shooting against these kids that have really high dollar pellet rifles. And this was his first competition. He came in second place at 8 years old. And I was like, okay, he just did this with a $20 pellet rifle, you know, BB gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, maybe I should, you know, work on this and make something out of it, you know. So,
right.
And we went into shotgun shooting, pistol shooting, and shotgun shooting after that. He was a state champ and a national finalist, and you know, I kind of live vicariously through him on that, because I'm too old to be doing it. So.
Well, that's awesome. And I remember we the reason that I kind of knew some of that was because whenever we had the stuff go down in our racing, you said that there were some things that, not necessarily cheating, but kind of some unclear things happening right there in the sport.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think we're talking about stuff like people try to get away with as much as they can in racing.
Right.
And same thing with the shooting sports, or just, I think it's in any sport. It's like, it don't matter if you're deflating a football a little bit, or if it's, you know, I mean, dropping sinkers in the mouth of a bass, you call it. There's always going to be somebody trying to get an edge on somebody else. So, you know, you got trigger poundage pull limits, you know, can't be, you know, under a certain poundage, and people would go under that poundage. And if they didn't get checked, they'd get through, and it give that little slight advantage sometimes can be the difference, because sometimes when you win, you only win by a point or two, or like you're racing, you might even win by inches or feet, you know.
Right.
It's
right.
So these little bitty things that don't seem like much will make the difference
make
in winning.
A big difference.
Yeah.
Yep. I totally understand. Well, that's awesome. And I think that's really neat that he's in the military now. I'd hate to be on the other side of him, for sure.
Oh yeah, you know? He's and he's still an avid shooter too, so yeah. He's really good.
Well, good. Mm. Well, real quick, I've got one question. I appreciate you being on here. The stories, everything's been awesome. Yeah. But I know you have things to do and stuff like that. So real quick, I've got one question that I've tried to ask everybody. And the common answer, first I'm going to throw the disclaimer of, you know, we're where we're supposed to be in life. You know, God places us where we're supposed to be. Everything happens for a reason. However, I like to ask people, if there was one thing you could go back, you've got the knowledge you have now. You can only take that back to being 21 years old. Is there anything that you would change?
Man, I've had that question asked in different ways so many times in my life. And sometimes I think, depending on where I'm at in life, sometimes I'm like, I wouldn't change anything because my mistakes led me to where I am now, and I'm happy where I am now. So, but, you know, it's regrets are what keeps you from making mistakes again.
Right.
So, and I have, I guess one of my big regrets were passing up on investment opportunities that I would be wealthy now if I would have listened to people.
Really?
I know that's not what people, that's probably not be the answer that people want to hear, but everybody makes mistakes in life, but in your mistakes, you know, that's the song, The Broken Road, you know, kind of, you know, it's yeah. not, you know, I wouldn't be here right now had I not made the mistakes I made.
Right.
But I'd also not have to work as hard if I'd invested my money better and been more thrifty with it. You know,
I got you.
I spend way too much money.
I totally understand. I think that's everybody. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We spend money on things we're passionate about.
I'm going to have to work, you know, till I absolutely have to retire because I was not better with my money younger.
I got you. Well, if you don't mind telling us, what would you have invested in? What are you referring to that you...
Oh, Apple or Amazon or Bitcoin. I had opportunity to buy Bitcoin when it was $2 a coin,
Really?
And, you know, I think now it's 97,000 a coin, you know.
Right. So. Right. Yeah, that's that would keep you up at night.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So, you know, just... but. And even just, you know, cashing out 401ks to buy a boat or something like that, you know, I never had faith in the stock market.
Right.
You know, I was like, it all crashed and all that money was for nothing. You know, I'd rather just have something tangible and enjoy it, you know, but that's great when you're young because I got to enjoy the boats and the side by side and the guns and whatever I bought with my money. But, you know, I might be struggling a little bit when I'm older because I didn't invest my money very well.
Right. Right. Totally understand. Well, that's great advice. I think that's certainly the best answer we've gotten, you know, so far for sure. Well, again, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate the stories. And again, let's go back through. If you are interested in having your house, I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I just don't know the proper terminology for your house treated.
That's exactly treated. Right. It's treated.
Okay.
That's right.
If you want your house treated, where can we find you?
You can call me at 601-606-5412, or you can visit VortecPestControl.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Vortec Pest Control.
Awesome. Thank you again, Mr. Jeremy.
Thank you for having me, Chase.
Thank you for listening to Off the Gas and On the Mic with Chase Holland. What'd you think about what you heard? Please follow for more content just like this.